Yeah? Did I not mention this?
Hello, welcome to Lug Radio Episode 2. It's the 3rd of March 2004. I'm Matthew Revelle, and with me is...
I am John O'Bacon.
I'm Steve Parks.
And I'm Ack.
And we're just going to chat over the next few minutes about Linux, open source, free software, GNU, all that sort of thing.
And do that again.
GNU. And so it wasn't this impressive next that time. What was that?
Erd.
It's the French name.
Oh, yeah. Richard III, yeah. So, anyway, we've just got some interesting statistics for you here.
Shoot.
On the first day that we were online, episode one, the Phantom Message, we did 6 gig of traffic.
That's a lot, isn't it?
That's not bad, is it, for four little lads from the West Midlands in the UK.
Speak for yourself, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We've only got one true. You were born here, weren't you, Sparks?
Yeah, indeed.
So there's only one of us really is from this debauched part of the world.
Well, if you want to find out more,
Wolverhampton.
We should put a picture online so people from the west coast of the states can actually see how beautiful Wolverhampton is.
We're quite big in Japan at the moment as well, according to the stats. So hello to everyone who's found us through yen.com.
And /.jp as well.
And as Spark said on the forum, let's not forget the US military seem to like us as well.
Absolutely. We seem to have had 47...
Us and Sun Tzu's The Art of War. It's fantastic.
47 hits from US military domains, so there you go.
Shoot the stats, Matt.
Right, 12 to 15 gigs so far through our various mirrors. We've had 62,000 hits on the main lugradio.org website. And we're estimating that we've had about 1,000 people download the files. So there
you go.
That's
quite a bit, isn't it?
That's not bad, yeah.
What a waste of bandwidth.
Absolutely, you know, hi to those 1,000 people.
So, right. Yeah.
Say hi, guys.
Hello.
In years to come, you'll be claiming you were one of those first days.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
With your iPod. So, the first thing that we need to talk about then, as we're talking about bandwidth, is the people who've donated some. So, in no particular order, James Turner, John Farmer, Simon B, Simon Mosrat Morris, Neuro, who's from Smoothwall,
yeah.
And Kevin St. Amour, who have... Is that a new one?
Yeah.
Ah, the Lost Olive. Ah, right, yeah.
That's right.
Hello to all of you. Thank you very much for donating your space to us and your bandwidth. That's great. That's about it, really. Yeah. Has anybody got anything to add to the introduction?
I don't think so. Let's rock and roll.
Let's go and order a pizza.
Traditionally, we should give away a free binder with this issue. some delays in the printing process, so your free binder is indefinitely delayed.
Now, as I understand it, you get the free binder as long as you promise to listen to the next 52 issues of Lugrania.
Yeah, we'll give it away with a difficult third issue.
Book club.
Absolutely.
Okay, here we go.
One of our regular features, if you can call doing it once regular, much like my sex life.
Oh, Sam's not going to listen.
Take
to this.
The slash dot. Right. Bring up slash dot.
Okay.
And we'll take the piss out of the headlines. You know it makes sense.
Right. Okay. Let's have a look.
What have we got?
The biggest waste of slash dot news. Okay.
God, is there nothing interesting? Purely functional data structures. Off.
Oh. It's no different, is it?
Are we going to avoid the SCO story?
We're going to avoid the SCO story because we don't want to go out of jail.
Okay, FreeBSD-based live CDs. Anyone use a live CD?
I've used one, yeah.
Do you like Canopix? Does anyone use FreeBSD, though?
Can I just say, how fucking hard would this be? It's how long has it took them? Canopix has never been around how long? And it's took the BSD guys this long to get one together. Normally... any bandwagon and they're jumping on it. There'll be a BSD radio station tomorrow.
Well, no, tomorrow you'll have net BSD based live toasters or elevator controllers or something.
Yeah.
It'll be ported
to your arse via your shoelaces.
I never want to have anything ported to my arse.
And then a few years later, the other BSDs will catch up.
Yeah. And then OpenBSD will shut it all down again because it's not secure.
Yeah.
To BSD's credit, when I first got into Linux and I was trying to get Slackware working, I got a copy of FreeBSD and it actually worked. No other Linux worked for me. Admittedly, I was installing it on a laptop, and back then it was like you might as well have installed it on, well, your left testicle for all, you know, for all you were trying to do.
Good.
But to its credit, it did actually work. I've not used it since. But why would I?
The free BSD guys would say because
it's free.
It's free. It's a bit more sane, and it runs Linux binaries. So theoretically, you'll do everything Linux. Now, I don't actually know. I mean, some of the cool stuff coming up with
but Linux
things,
is
things
free.
Like you, Dev, and Push.
And Linux runs Linux binaries.
Well, yeah. But it runs free BSD binaries as well. And the ports collection's good.
Because there's so many free BSD only free BSD applications that I want to use. Yeah.
Which version of BSD is it that macOS 10 runs off?
That's Darwin.
Darwin.
I know, but it's based on BSD, isn't it?
Free BSD, I think.
It's based on BSD code, but...
Oh, yeah. Right, okay.
I'm not sure what they forked it from. I think it was NetBSD, but I wouldn't swear to it. And they'd have hacked the shit out of it anyway, to the point where it's a different one anyway.
Yeah. No, it actually works quite well. It looks nice. I'm not saying that the other one doesn't. I'm just saying it.
Don't forget, the Microsoft TCP/IP stack is BSD as well.
Yep.
And that doesn't work very well at all.
So no to BSD then.
Well, I mean, the ports collection is good, if you're not a Debian user.
Ah, there's the only thing I know about BSD and the ports thing is Gen 2, which I thought was quite a cool concept, and it seemed to work quite well. But
it rhymes with poo as well. That's a side benefit.
It's the name of a very fast penguin.
The Gen 2 guys are there writing it down for their website as we speak. Jeez, we forgot that. We never thought of that. It rhymes with poo. There's our unique selling point.
This is
a red hat off.
This is a point that the BSD guys have got. Linux can steal their ideas and their code, but they can't have ours.
Exactly.
No, which is
not
why,
compatible.
Well, we don't believe in freedom, do we, after all?
which is why RMS invented the GPL in the first place. You know, and why the Microsoft TCP/IP stack is BSD.
And shite.
Well, yeah, but I don't know whether it's shite in BSD.
Well, no, because OpenBSD doesn't crash every time you send anybody back.
Well, no, but you don't know whether the BSD stack itself, the TCP/IP stack itself is shit, or whether it's just they've tied it into everything else that's shit.
Much as I'm sure our listeners are riveted by this discussion of the TCP/IP stack, shall we move swiftly on to our second story? Okay, the next one we have here is two-legged home robot is coming soon to Japan.
Bullshit.
Well, blow me down.
I'll tell you what, this is one of them things, like, you know, we're all going to be living on the fucking moon in 20 years. Yeah?
Or the year 2000, it's going to stop us being able to get bread from Sainsbury's.
Yeah, you know, it's like every year someone invents a robot and says,
hands
you know,
up.
You're going to have a robot made this time next year. We just need to get a bit more funding and work out a couple of problems, like you can't make robots that work like humans.
Okay, hands up. Who in this room...
Hands up! Say yes.
Okay, visual joke. Say yes if you're in this room and actually bought a Sony Aibo.
Yes. Oh, well, there's nothing wrong. The Aibos are quite cool.
What?
Aibo or Feebo?
Right, so you had it how long?
I had it about 6 months.
And how long did you use it for after you bought it?
I don't know. I can't recall.
I think the inaccurate word in that question was use. You can't use a toy dog.
You can the one with the slot up the arse for the memory stick. If you've
that's
got
why Sparks wants one.
If you've got a member shaped like a Sony memory stick.
Once again, something the Sony marketing department never thought of in their advertising.
You see, this is enlightened broadcasting. This is what we were put on Earth
absolutely.
For.
Absolutely. Like radio, reviews you can use. It's fantastic.
Okay.
Sony, dogs you can't use.
Should we go for one more, chaps?
Okay. Well, let's find one that's interesting.
Let's go back to the top.
Back to the top.
/disappointing this week.
Acer plans a £16 notebook. How heavy are normal notebooks?
I don't know.
A lot less than 16 pounds.
Mine's 1.4, I think.
That's over a stone. My dog weighs less than that.
You weigh your dog?
I did the other day, yeah.
Why?
Because it's little, and I thought, how heavy are you, Snoopy? He's 13 pounds and 6 ounces.
The wonderful world of Matt Revell. Yeah, I mean... I've got a laptop and it weighs a ton, so anything that's lighter is good for me. But
that no way is a £16 notebook lighter. That's incredibly heavy. That's about the height. That's about the weight of 8, 10, 12 laptops.
Do you want me to read the spec out though? What it says here?
You run with it.
I'll read the story. It says, well, not exactly gigantic, but at £16 and sporting a 17-inch screen, this thing is stretching the term portable. It also features a 3E gigahertz Pentium 4, 1 gig of RAM, 7200 RPM, 160 gig hard disk, DVD burner, and kitchen sink.
Oh, the humour.
It doesn't.
Oh, you know, Slashdot is just comedy.
It is, absolutely.
Let's forget Slashdot for today.
You are listening to the Gladio.
Radio. Okay, the next little part of our show today is dedicated to a little enjoyable rant that I've been having with the BBC recently, and the other guys thought it would prove to be interesting in the show. Basically, some people will be familiar with this, that the BBC posted an article on the BBC News website that was all about... it was basically all about the MyDoom virus and accusing the Linux community of allegedly being involved, you know, writing this virus. The BBC claimed that it was very much an opinion piece because it said the word analysis at the top, which...
Can I just point out, this is total editorial content, our whole show, so the BBC cannot have any complaints about anything you might want to say about the BBC.
Yeah, this is our opinion.
It's exactly the same
reason.
This
is all completely opinion, you know. Let's make that clear.
I mean, it's my opinion that the BBC wrote the Mind Doom virus to... obviously it's not, but...
It made good news.
I know as much about the BBC, probably more about the BBC than they know about the Linux community, and it's... shit, basically.
The thing, that, I mean, the issue that I had with it was the fact that the guy, yeah, it was marked up as an opinion piece, but you just can't go and make up crap just because it's your opinion. I can't go and say, you know, I saw Ack over the road the other day with a ladyboy, you know.
That's right, you can't say that.
And, you know, it's just, you can't make things up and just post them as opinion. And I don't think it was particularly clear that it was an opinion piece. When I spoke to a guy who was the business... editor of BBC News, and he stated to me that he thought, you know, they'd had quite a few complaints about this issue.
Right.
Incidentally, the letter that I received seems to be a bit of a carbon copy because there was a thread on the Linux Format, great magazine, you should read it, website, stating that loads of people had received letters with exactly the same response.
Oh, undoubtedly it'll be a carbon copy, yeah.
Can
we just put this in some context, though? The BBC News site is... or the BBC site as a whole, is the, I think, the largest website in Europe. It's viewed by people all over the world.
It's the most visited website in the UK.
That's right, and it's the most visited content-driven, as in not non-commercial, website in Europe. It is absolutely huge. The BBC, with this website, have the ability to shape and influence opinions. So yeah. When they flag something up as analysis, that makes me think... Right, they are putting a cold, hardline analysis, hardline not being the right word, what I mean is cold, unemotional, yeah. Impartial. This is what the BBC is for, it's for impartial. So you have a site that says BBC News, you expect it to have everything that the BBC News has associated with it. So that is impartiality, although every Tory government will tell you that they've got left-wing bias and every Labour government will tell you that they've got a Tory bias, but let's not worry about that. So you expect it to be impartial, and... if they flag something up as analysis, it isn't opinion, in my opinion.
Another thing, the BBC site is recommended by people like Michael Moore as a place to get news, because a lot of Americans, their media is so tightly controlled by such a small group of companies, that they actually talk about the BBC as a place you can get impartial news.
This is the issue, though, is that, I mean, when I spoke to the guy on the phone, the one thing that he was adamant that it was quite clear that this was an opinion, and he thought that was it came across to me that was an excuse, that everything was all right. You know, this guy Stephen Evans can say what the fuck he wants just because it's an opinion, and it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is there. I mean, there's kind of two sides to that. The first one, in my mind, is that anything like Matt says, anything the BBC publish has an imprimatur of reasonableness of good analysis behind it. Because they're the BBC, you know, most respected news organisation in the world. Nation shall speak peace unto nation and all that. So you read something on the BBC site, and like you say, you think, okay, I believe that. The second thing is I get the impression that, I mean, I can't say this is true, but I don't think necessarily it's
official BBC policy to accuse the Linux community of writing the MyDoom files.
No.
But this guy wrote it, and now they've got to stand behind him because he's their reporter.
It's the age-old BBC story, isn't it? It's the way things work at the BBC. They look after their own. I mean,
Unless you kill
them. Well, yeah. just to...
But if you're Dr. David Kelly...
I'm sure you are.
Let's stay well away from Dr. David Kelly.
But, you know, I have a deep respect and love for the BBC. I really do. I think it's great value for money for, you know, the tiny amount we pay for it in comparison to some pay TV channels. But it does sometimes get it wrong. And the trouble is that when it gets it wrong, it seems so reluctant to own up to it.
This is part of the problem is that when you make a complaint to the BBC, you don't want to be just. I mean, you don't want to just be fobbed off and then not accept that there's an issue there. I mean, if the guy had accepted, you know, like it said to me, well, you know, it was an opinion piece, and we can kind of see where you're coming from because you know it doesn't necessarily come across that way, so we can see why people are taking complaints. The one thing I was told was, you know. Oh, every time we have a news story, we get an absolute bucket load of complaints, and this didn't even register on the scale of complaints. He kind of made it seem as if this was not even a minor issue in terms of complaints. That's not something to be proud of, you know. That's not something to tell people when they're complaining to you about something.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that the way or the best way that you should assess how offensive something was how many people complained about it. It's more that, I mean, yeah, most people wouldn't care about the SCO and Linux. It should be nice if they did, but they don't. It was a real serious wrong footing, in my opinion.
I think it was devastating in the sense as, you know, it was... If you read through the original article, the guy kind of builds up and he skirts around the fact as to whether he's accusing the Linux community or not. And then he makes an outright claim. And when I spoke to this guy on the phone, he said it all hedged around one sentence. I'm just going to see if I can find the sentence that it was. Oh, no, I can't. I haven't got the actual original article.
But we'll link to the article on the site, and we can quote that sentence on the site. But, I mean, I'm going to say something maybe slightly controversial, maybe slightly ridiculous now, but what if you replace the word open source or the words open source or the word Linux with gay? And then you're talking about the gay software community, okay, but if you read further on in the article, you're talking about a particular community attacking someone and generalising. You know, if he said all Asian people have decided to write a virus to attack a company, there'd be loads of outcry. And I'm not saying that we're some minority that's been really hard done by as Linux users, but I really don't think that we got the treatment we should have done.
Yeah, it's not fair because it's not political enough. Because it's not political enough, they don't seem to give a fuck about it. You know, it's like I can imagine that within the BBC, all the techies there are going to be thinking that's pretty bad. But all the editorial are going to be thinking, well, you know, Linux is this community. There's this case building up, but it's such a specialist area.
The editorial are more part of the BBC, more interested in who's going to get to televise the boat race this year.
Yeah, I mean, the problem, I think, there is that I imagine whoever it was wrote the MyDoom virus, probably a Linux user, doesn't like SCO. But you can't realistically say that just because they feel like that, everyone else who feels the same way they do would have taken the same action they did.
Yeah.
Just write a virus.
There's plenty of evidence as well to suggest that the virus came from Russia and was also part of a spamming operation. So,
yeah.
I mean... You know, it's just a cover for that sort of thing.
Tarring everybody with the same brush.
I think there was one other issue as well with this case, is that the original so-called opinion piece, the analysis piece, failed to mention anything to do with the fact that the SCO case is on considerably dodgy ground. It went into the details of saying the Linux community are having this big battle with SCO or vice versa. And it kind of skirted around the idea of there's this ongoing battle between SCO and the Linux community. But it didn't actually say, you know, well, but, you know, the actual SCO case is on pretty shaky ground, and you can link to this site to read more about it, or you can link here to read more about it. It just was a very, very one-sided view, and since I've become a journalist and a writer myself, I find it absolutely shocking, and I've just been doing this for a little while. This guy's obviously pretty experienced at what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he, you know, to have risen to... you know, American business correspondent or whatever he is in the BBC. He must have done something right. But at the risk of, you know, basically defaming the guy, it sounds like a bit of poor journalism to me. That it's just pure lazy journalism is what it seems to me.
That's pure opinion, of course.
That is just my opinion.
Analysis.
Yeah, that's my analysis of the situation.
Yeah, so without further ado, everyone should point their web browsers to this article. Everybody should point their web browsers to my website to read the response letter and the Linux forums, and everyone should get on the phone to the BBC and register their complaints.
And we'll link to all the relevant parts on the Lug Radio site.
Absolutely.
This is a public announcement warning. The reason why Ack is a bit quiet in the next segment is that because he was making so many pops into the microphone, we put a sock on his microphone. And unfortunately, this is the thickest sock in the world, so therefore Ack's a bit quiet. So you'll have to put your ears right against the speakers when you listen to this segment.
La 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 la. La 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 la.
That is the sound, as all UK listeners will know, of Desert Island Discs, the BBC Radio 4 programme that is all about choosing some records that you'd like to listen to on a desert island if you were stuck there. Mr. Sparks has Desert Island Discs with a K in the disc, which is his own little version. Take it away, Sparks.
Okay, go on, Sparks.
Okay, new feature. We're going to pick a number of software programs to be decided. Traditionally, it's 8 to 78 records, but they moved on to CDs and things, so this desert island has suddenly got a power supply. Our desert island has got a computer. Excuse me.
Sparks has got cold, if you can.
It's got a cold as well. Our desert island's got a computer with an internet connection, a bootable kernel, a full compiler suite, a basic editor, and a web browser. Anything else we need?
Sounds.
No, you don't get anything else for free, I don't think.
Anything else?
You get, you know, crap like libraries.
Something
like
basically
boot your system. You have to ask for GTK.
All the libraries are free. Except, of course, for Qt and some Moti. Restrictions.
You get, you get an Ogg Vorbis player, so you can listen to this show as well.
Absolutely. Your web browser will only go to lugradio.org.
Yeah, that sounds good.
/ get there. Okay.
What's your number one, Mr. Sparks?
Well,
it's
I wrote my list before we decided you got a web browser for free. So my number one is Firebird or Firefox, depending on which version you're using.
Why is that?
Yeah, relate it to some important event in your life so that we're more likely to...
Lug Radio. The only way. I keep telnetting to port 80 on www.lugradio.org. And all this strange stuff comes up in very badly written HTML and CSS.
That's the website that you made for the Lug Radio website.
Fantastic advertisement for myself.
Employ this man.
So, Mozilla... I picked one of the Mozillas because I use it every day. One of the first things I use. I can't say the first every day because it depends on which virtual desktop I left my laptop on when I went to bed.
I'm getting the impression he uses lots of virtual desktops. One for porn, one for... What else do you have virtual desktops for? Pray tell, Mr. Parks.
My last...
Animal porn.
Animal porn. My last virtual desktop is actually always... my email client, which at the moment is Evolution, because it means that I don't forget to do things as well. So when I get the email to remind me to do something, I actually put reminders all over Evolution to remind me to do it.
Hang on a sec. That was a moment of Ack not ranting about Evolution.
I didn't say a word. It's all right. I mean, it's f***ing enormous.
On the Evolution.
Yeah. I need the
features. That wasn't an invitation to rant about it. It was just
mere observation. I would say anything. Continue.
Talking of virtual desktops, didn't Microsoft invent those?
Absolutely.
That's very true.
That's incredible. Haven't they patented it?
Well, they're trying to.
Yeah. Word prior art.
Words I'm going to patent the shoe tomorrow.
Amazing.
I thought you said the shrew at first.
You can't patent
that. Matt's just spat everywhere.
You can't patent that in Europe. Okay.
Number two.
Number three fact, because Evolution was number two.
Oh, Evolution, right, okay.
next is VI.
VI?
Yeah.
VI?
What's wrong
but
with
you? But why are you choosing that?
Because I've got a Twitch and automatically presses the colon key on my keyboard. So it's, it comes in handy.
You've got a Twitch that
presses your colon.
I keep going. Twitch, switching mode. So might as well make use of this and use a modal editor. Q-ack rant.
Cock. The only editor. Right, that's Ack banging his head against the microphone. Yes.
VI is all right. It's, you know, obviously the
it was
first...
all right in 1981 when you needed modal editors.
No. As soon as you learn how to exit it without panicking, which most beginners do.
It does share the whole, oh no, I've got into it and I can't get back out again thing with Emacs. You have to kill it from another shell. It's shit.
It edits text.
Would it even be VI?
It edits text.
I said Vim. It's Vim. Hmm. It is Vim, but I only ever talked VI.
It's still... colour-coded impressive shit.
I was going to say...
It's like a turd with glitter on Vim.
It's supposed to be VI improved. In what way is it improved? It's still VI, isn't it? Which is not very good. I was going to say something I've seen then, but I'm going to be good today.
Not VI fans here.
No.
Except me, obviously.
Except Sparks.
One day it might be very improved, totally obsolete Vim 2.
I wondered why you were being quiet.
He was working at an acronym.
It was writing down on a piece of paper first.
That's a soft...
Okay.
What? Thank you for that. Spark, number four.
It's a drink.
The next virtual terminal along, if you work from the right, as we do in other big countries such as Great Britain, is actually normally has two totally different applications running on it.
I sense you're trying to cheat here.
What, and not have 24 virtual desktops on my laptop. No, it actually has XChat on it.
A quality choice.
For chatting on Lug Radio on FNet, if anyone wants to go and own our channel, because we've got no option there at the moment.
You so have to hang around a little while to get Sparks to notice you there.
Yeah. I
generally, due to his animal porn virtual desktop that he's otherwise occupied in.
I generally idle on IRC 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and chat about four lions. My logs are pretty impressive, as I'm sure you've all seen.
Forgot to go about seven. Jesus. Right, XChat, and what else?
On the same virtual desktop, I have VNC to connect to the Windows boxes. Because I can't be arsed to fucking get up and actually touch one of the bastards. See if anything ever goes wrong on VNC into it.
What do they do? These Windows boxes you have.
One is my girlfriend's machine, and she won't let me put anything better on it.
Right. And the other one?
And the other one I'd rather not discuss. It's a security concern.
Right, okay, so...
No, just keeping the back door open.
Do tell us. Oh, wimp.
Shaking the head there.
Sparks shakes head.
Okay.
So Sparks with his internet connection sharing firewall,
Have you ever watched BBC One in the middle of the night on the sign zone?
No, I'm too busy watching all night poker or whatever the hell it's called.
I'm too busy sleeping because I've got a job.
Oh,
that's so harsh.
Sparks, he shouldn't say things to you about that, you know. I mean, you're not going to take it. No, because they have like Wildlife on One and then have... This woman will describe the bits and pieces. So, like, you know, an otter will fall off a cliff or something. The otter falls off the cliff.
I used to prefer Johnny Morris, you know. Oh, I've fallen off a cliff.
Oh, it's okay.
Came the walrus.
Far
and a koala bear says, g'day.
Why is that?
He couldn't do any accents. He could do voices, but an accent. He was a fantastic... Introduction to animals for children who grew up in the 70s.
Look where they are now. Is that it then?
No, because I picked eight, as is traditional.
Hang on, what was this about animals and otters falling off?
Oh, sorry, yeah, there was a point, was there, right?
No, okay. I was just curious, because obviously Sparks shook his head, and we need someone to say, Sparks shakes his head. Something similar to that, so... We need to employ some suitable person for the radio.
Go for to sit in the corner and describe what we're doing.
Gophers can't talk. They're animals.
That's Johnny Morris, dude. We've talked on that.
Yeah, they're super gophers.
The scary thing about that phenomenon was we'd sit there eating Cadbury's Animal Magic biscuits, watching animals talking on Animal
Made
Magic.
In the chocolate factory.
Yeah, made in the chocolate factory. Hello, Tim. Okay, the next application I've got is Secure Shell. For when I can't be off to actually stand up and go upstairs and actually log into my other machine upstairs. And my last application is Python, because if I've forgot anything else, I can just write it, can't I?
Mm-hmm. I concur entirely.
Shocking.
Quite a simple choice, that one.
I'm surprised you concur, you know? Yeah, I didn't know you liked Python.
No, I didn't. I only discovered it yesterday.
I'm sure. Yeah.
I only discovered it last week after many years of ignoring ACK.
Well, I've been telling people for months and months and months that they need to go and learn Python, and Sparks comes into the LUG meeting and says, oh, I had a look at Python. It's brilliant, isn't it? And I said, yeah. Did I not mention this? You see, people are learning. I recommend Smoothball, everybody's using it. I recommend Debian, everybody's
actually,
using it.
Actually, Mono always... kick ass.
Well,
doesn't actually work.
No,
in
no,
my
no.
Equipment.
We love Smoothball. Smoothball. Really, sorry, Nero.
Nero, you rock because you give us
Nero.
Nero,
you're our hero.
Yes. Big Brother has spoken. Mm. Okay, so is that it?
And no, traditionally, I can choose a book and a luxury as well.
Oh, come on then.
A book.
Book. Nothing at all to do with computing because I've got all the computer stuff and the geeky stuff I want. I can still see slash dot. So I've got all the crap I need.
So you can take the Viz Book of Crap jokes with you as well, or something.
Yeah, Roger Melly or something like that. I didn't think that.
Profanosaurus.
The Profanosaurus, that would keep me amused for many, many seconds. my book is one that I'm rereading again at the moment. There are books in your life that you keep rereading again and again and again. And this is one of them.
George's Marvelous Medicine.
Yeah, George's
Marvelous. Yeah, what a fantastic book. His grandmother.
Anything by Ronald Dahl, anything. No, back to what I was saying. Back to what I was saying. Nothing to do with the tweets.
No, it's Roald. R-O-I.
I am Norwegian.
Ronald, for God's sake. Sorry.
Peace out of me. I hope plays things, can I? Angry White Pyjamas by Robert Twigger.
Brilliant.
Which I recommend to absolutely everybody. It's a life-changing book. It is one of those books that is just so bloody brilliant that you take up sport. A sport where you actually tend to hit people and break arms.
You really don't take up Aikido after you've read the
book. Oh, not Yoshinda Aikido, anyway. But it is a fantastic book.
A guy, he was a poet at Oxford University, and he went out to Japan and lived there for a bit, and started doing the toughest Aikido course in the whole world.
Right.
The Japanese riot police course.
Sounds
one for us. Slash dot JP listeners there.
It is, yes.
Probably not. He's not very polite about certain aspects of Japanese society. But nothing they wouldn't agree with, but they wouldn't actually write it down and sell it in a book.
Right.
It's not in their culture to do that kind of thing.
Well, I've never heard of that book, so...
neither have I.
I'm going to have to photocopy it tomorrow. Marks.
Not my copy, it's fell in the bath hundreds of times.
Okay. Moving swiftly.
You can photocopy my copy, if you like. And your luxury item?
My luxury would be Pepsi. And other caffeinated and carbonated drinks.
I think to fit in with the general, you know, feeling of this show, it should be open cola.
Actually, I prefer, what's the Karachi cola or whatever it is?
Mecca cola.
I love Mecca cola.
That open cola thing.
Is that like Mecca
finger? Is it pucker? I only glanced at it. It's not.
It's a recipe.
Yeah.
But it's a marketing ploy for a company to do collaboration software.
Right.
Open source collaboration software.
Right, okay.
I think it's a very good marketing.
I don't know very much about it. I actually thought
it was a real beverage.
Oh, it is. No, they sell it, they make it, and they give you the recipe for it, and you can can make it, but I suppose you'd have to blow your own bubbles into it.
Is the recipe... Jono explodes with laughter, or explodes while trying to control the laughter.
It looked like he's creating bubbles to me.
The recipe, is it not like, you know, add some E137 at this point?
No, I don't remember. It's several years since I actually looked at the... Well,
burn some sugar,
years.
Stick it in some water, add some cola nuts.
No, we're not talking about heroin.
What?
Okay.
You've obviously
His name is Matthew Ravel. He lives at...
No, I was just thinking
Matt's
of...
recipe for black tar.
On TV, when they always get a spoon and, like, put a lighter under it and make it hot, and it always looks to me like it's just... burning sugar.
I love
that's
this.
What
I
it
love...
is. That's all heroin is. No, it's burning sugar.
Oh, right. If I'd known that.
Isn't it Ajax?
Amazing. It's
well, the football team.
It's this it's huge detective, isn't it? Fraud. They're a Dutch football team. It's this huge fraud on the part of the drug industry that all the guys out there with syringes haven't realised yet. Heroin, Tate and Lyle sugar. It's amazing.
Other sugar brands are available. Sugar.
That's what I call it, Prevail, obviously.
Yeah.
I think we've lost brown. The track here somewhere on the line.
What were we talking about?
Cola.
Oh, well, yeah, open cola. Cola. Which is Sparks' luxury item.
My luxury item is carbonated and caffeinated.
I don't know how you drink cola, it's rank.
As he takes a glug of coke.
Glug being the glosser lug.
Okay.
Glug actually being the term we should use according to the Free Software Federation.
For GNU Linux user group, absolutely.
Yep. Oh, fuck a bunch of GNU Linux. Bloody GNU Linux, you know. I went for a shit today, and I'm going to call it Mama Lizzie's shit, aren't I? Because that's where it came from. I don't think so.
They came from Jono's arse.
Yeah, but Mama Lizzie's was the... Mama Lizzie's great restaurant in Wolverhampton, incidentally.
Was the major contributor.
Was the major contributor to the peanuts. GNU Linux. Anyway, moving swiftly on.
GNU. As a Debian GNU Linux user, have you squared this with your conscience?
I use Debian.
GNU Linux or GNU Linux?
I don't use Debian GNU Linux. GNU Debian Linux. I use Linux.
You use Debian GNU Linux or Debian GNU Herd, surely? Those are the choices. Debian GNU BSD.
Yep.
Is in production as well, of course.
In all honesty, I've never used Herd before. Does it actually run?
Yeah. It's one of those things. I get the impression that, you know, the four or five guys who really know what they're doing have a brilliant working system, and everyone else is short of documentation.
Yeah. If you know what you're doing, it should be fucking better than Linux.
It's cool. The theory behind it is cool. Like, the theory behind Roxos is cool. It just doesn't exist properly yet.
I was wondering when that
fantastic, fantastic website, by the way. Two news items, both ancient. still the non-existent screenshots link. And look, the worst thing is, the screenshots is the only thing that could ever fucking do, because the operating system might not work, but the actual front-end glossy bits do exist.
Now listen, for someone...
desktop bits, can I just say, we'll have this desktop and an operating system that works the same way.
For someone who hasn't got a clue what Roxos is, can I have the, like, you know, the Roxos 101 or whatever the Americans would say?
The 10-second summary?
Yeah, the introduction.
Rox is, the Rox desktop is a desktop environment built around the Rox filer, and the Rox filer works like RISC-OS used to on the Archimedes machines.
Wow.
So the idea behind it is, instead of having something like a start menu, for example, you just categorise applications by where they are on the file system. So you have an applications directory in there, you might have an editors directory, but your editor's in it. The point about it is that, like the Mac, applications are relocatable. If you want to move an application, you just drag the application from where it is now to where you want it to be, and that's it. It has, an application isn't composed of a bit in user bin and a bit in user share and a bit in, you know, user local or wherever the hell. Your application isn't distributed in bits across your hard drive.
Is it Linux?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's more of a user space thing, isn't it?
Yes, oh, absolutely, yeah. The intention is not to fiddle with the kernel or anything like that.
If you've used a Mac, then it's kind of, you can...
By the sounds of it, an Amiga.
Yeah, same kind of principle.
We weren't rich enough to have an Amiga.
Weren't you?
We had a Commodore 16.
we were all tossers because we couldn't afford Amigas.
Yeah, so we had a big printer.
Yeah. We had a calculator.
The Atari Falcon could have been a good machine.
I really wanted a Falcon.
Me too.
Yeah. Sam Coupe.
Three machine.
Another one of those machines that just never made it. It was on the edge and fantastic.
The Sam Coupe was for those people who don't know, it was a Konix multi-system with a keyboard, because that was another one that looked like it was going to be ace, and it never happened. But then the Sam happened, quite a few of them were sold.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
when you say quite a few, you mean, you know, 19 or something?
I bet several thousands. You know, obviously not several enough thousands keep. What's his name? Miles Gordon floats, but it's still sold.
One of these things that was a good theory, and it never took off. There's so many machines. A bit like Herd. Yeah, a bit like the
which
end
when it does
at the moment.
Yeah, when it does get to the end, will be absolutely brilliant.
Dragon 32.
Herd. I think I've got a Dragon 32 in my mom's house.
In the caves.
Yeah, yeah.
Wherever you want to get your kicks, man.
That was the game. It might be the only game. That's the
lots of Suspect in the Case, Horace Goes Skiing. TISA.
So okay. Horace, Hungry Horace was the first, then Horace Goes Skiing. Then
what about Horace in the Park? Spiders. There's one where
nah,
with Horace.
Hungry Horace. Oh. He's chased by the park keeper, which was a, like an egg with a hat on.
Did I tell you that I met the guy who wrote Dizzy?
The actual guy?
The twins.
Darling? I met one of them, yeah. I met
Darling?
Yeah, one of... Sweetie.
Darling.
The Darling twins.
I met one of the guys who wrote Dizzy. He came to our university when, and he did a lecture on what you have to do if you want to get in the games industry. And I shook his hand and I was shaking in my boots. I was so excited.
Actually,
I went home and had an intimate moment.
While we talk about that, there's an interview with those in Retro Gamer magazine, and I'm just gonna plug it so the editor who's gonna listen to this will see that I am a really serious journalist and can write that series of articles for you.
every now and again, you run into people who were doing computer things in our formative years. And one of the guys I was down in Dorset at the weekend with a few guys, one of them, Dunstan Orchard, turned out they used to edit Acorn User for a bit.
Well, I used to...
Wow, that's really cool, you know?
Yeah.
Random guys who you chat with, they're doing something now, and then you find out they used to write for Your Sinclair 10 years ago. Or something like that, and you think, wow!
See the Warthog.
Julian Rittman was his name. I met him once, and I was like, fucking hell! You used to work for Crash?
There was some guy who used to work... I used to work at an online bank who shall remain nameless. And there was a guy who used to sit down the road, down the corridor from me, who used to write Spectrum games. And I just don't really know where to take this, because I don't know his name, so I can't really impress him.
This is the
What's
world...
What's his name, like Jeff Bollock or something?
The world we're living in.
That's Greg something.
The world we're
Greg
living in.
Greg Bollock.
This bloke, no, Dave, who we'll call Dave because it's his name, was a really talented programmer, and he wrote a lot of VIC-20 stuff and stuff like that in the 80s, and he was only like 12 or 13 at the time.
Yeah.
And was making an absolute fortune, more than his dad in 1 year, and he was working on the help desk throughout the late 90s.
Yeah, well,
couldn't be asked for development.
Right, well, yeah. Just want to give a quick shout out to Shvuk from Cumbria Lug, and also to DJ from Southwest Lug, and just a general hello to everyone who has been in touch and has been really cool on the forums.
Yeah, can I just add one more thing? It's taken a lot of effort to get Lug Radio going, and all of these people make it a lot easier to record these shows and to make sure that we've got ideas coming in, because in all honesty, we are vessels of brain dead nature and we need your ideas. So thanks very much, and we'll see you in the next edition.
Yep, please don't forget to visit our website www.lugradio.org. There's the forums there, check those out, and also email us on
show@lugradio.org. That's show@lugradio.org.
Nice.